This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. I've done a podcast interview with Jeff Hastings in the past, but there's a lot going on with BrightSign, and it was time for a catch-up with the CEO. BrightSign will ship about 300,000 little purple digital signage players this year, at a clip of something like 1,200 units a day. The players have become their own hardware category, as in, are you planning to use PCs, smart displays, or BrightSign boxes? In our chat, we talk about why BrightSign devices have so much traction in the marketplace and why so many software and solutions companies are signing on now as integrated partners. We get into the thinking behind a service called BSN Cloud that is now coming out of beta testing and into wider release. And we talk broadly about what CIOs and IT managers need to think about when they start looking at large-scale digital signage networks. The IT guys I used to refer to as the Dr. No crowd are now very much on board with using special purpose devices that just work and don't bring the headaches of full PCs and their operating systems. Mr. Hastings, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Dave?
Very well, thanks. How are things going with BrightSign? Have things turned around for you guys finally?
Turned around? I don't know what. They continue to go like a freight train. So yeah, they're continuing to go very well. We're doing larger and larger projects every day.
Yeah, it's nutty. The last two times I've seen you and looked over at the BrightSign booth at trade shows, you guys are just like jammed with people. And I believe the last time I asked you how many units you were shipping, it was something like 1,200 per day.
I forget the exact number. We'll ship over 300,000 units this year. So when you think about from a business day shipping, it must be around 1,200 or so. But we ship a lot.
Wow. Would you have any sense of the total count of active BrightSign players out in the field?
We don't have an exact number, but it's the best estimate we have because there's, some of them get discontinued in non-networked environments that we don't know about, but we think it's around 1.2 to 1.3 million devices that are active today.
Wow.
We know just from network connected devices working on our infrastructure that it's about 250,000 devices is actually network connected to kind of either our backend or our software running in other network backends.
Oh, okay.
And so it's a lot of
devices. No kidding. It's a problem a whole bunch of other companies would like to have. Your company's also been integrating like crazy with CMS companies in the last couple of years. What's kind of behind that?
Well, so, our real philosophy and kind of the business strategy is we want to be the endpoint. So when you want to be the endpoint, it would be very difficult in this digital signage market to be the endpoint for every vertical. Because that would say that I'm going to own every single vertical market out there. Mm-hmm. We don't think that's what we should do. Our expertise is really building the endpoint and the ecosystem of software around that endpoint to make it an awesome endpoint. So what we do is we integrate with really CMS providers, but I look at them as really focusing on some vertical market that they specialize in. And most CMS providers will say, oh, we do everything. Mm-hmm. The reality is most of them have a pretty target market that they succeed in, and then they do other projects outside of that. So what we want to do is have the widest possible collection we can of these vertically focused applications aka CMSs, running on our platform.
And what's driving it on the CMS software side? Like, why are they coming to you? Is it because they have end users are saying, yeah, we like you guys, but we want to use Brightside and Boxes?
I think there's three reasons. One is we've got a reputation in the market of being an incredibly reliable, robust device. So there's customers telling the CMS providers, I want to use a Brightside. Secondly, it's the CMS providers are dying from support of platforms. So one of the things that we do is as we come out with new versions, we try to make them completely backward compatible so that you don't have to do a lot of updates on the CMS side and that it's stable. What happens with a lot of other devices is the operating system is changing out from under them. So if you've got a consumer operating system, call it Windows, call it Mac, call it Chrome, call it Android, those things are changing all the time and new updates are coming out. Or a lot of times in the case of Android, those things are ancient versions because, you know, someone in China built it and they just, you know, took the reference design and threw it on there. Mm-hmm. What happens with the CMS providers is they're constantly trying to keep up with this. And then on the SoC side, these guys, most of them focus on it's a new version. And it's not that new version is upgradable to the old ones. So the CMS providers end up having to support this very large number of endpoint devices. We take that problem away from them. So what happens is once the CMS get integrated to our platform, it's a very cost competitive platform and it's stable. So it reduces the amount of work that they have to do.
So if you push a firmware update to your little purple boxes, it's going to be backwards compatible. It's pretty much seamless for the CMS operator.
Exactly. So literally I could take a box from 4 years ago and I could pull out the SD card and I could plug it in with a brand new box that we manufactured last week and that will all run. Mm-hmm. It's all backward compatible.
That brings up an interesting point. With SD cards, I have heard many, many times that that's a risky way to go just because there's only so many read-write cycles that these things can handle.
Well, that is true. But the reality of it is the memory that's on these SD cards mm-hmm. is the same memory that either you have soldered down on the board or that you put in an SSD drive. Is exactly the same flash chip.
Okay.
So what we do is we allow people to have two options. One is to use an SD card. And what we do is we work with a couple of the large SD card manufacturers and we work with them to essentially, you know, we have spec'd an industrial grade version of these things. And we do accelerated life testing on them that should give you 5 years, even under heavy use.
Yeah.
So if you buy, and what happens with SD cards is, if you think about an SD card in the 99% case, it's plugged into a device and it's used incredibly infrequently. And it's written to and read to a trivial amount.
Yeah.
Well, when you're in your primary storage, it's getting written to and read from a lot. So what happens on consumer cards, people is like, well, why would I pay your expensive price for that SD card? Well, the reality is when SD cards are built, there's flash memory that are on them. And when flash memory is produced, it's what's called bend, and they categorize it into a whole bunch of different quality levels. Well, at the lowest quality level, it's essentially junk. But guess what? They're going to sell it to someone, and it'll work a little bit. So you can buy that SD card. Oh, I can get a 32 gig SD card for $6. I'm like, oh no, you don't want to use that because it's going to fail. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we do controlled bombs on the controller, the firmware on the controller, and it's called high bend flash, which means it's the top quality flash.
Right.
And with that, you basically get very long life. But a lot of people actually buy those same flash chips. They're packaged differently, but it's exact same semiconductors in the middle of the chip. And what they do is they solder that down on the board and say, oh, it's built in. Well, the reality is flash has a limited life. So if you've soldered that down and it runs out, it's a consumable. It's like a battery.
Yeah.
Once you consume those cycles, now your whole player is dead.
Yeah.
So that's why we use SD cards. It's basically the way to have a replaceable technology. And if you buy the high quality ones, it's a great solution. If you buy the cheap ones, it's like you buy cheap anything. You're gonna end up with problems.
Yeah.
And then with the SSDs, you know, the SSDs are a little bit better solution because they actually have some RAM on them instead of just flash memory. And so you get some caching, so you minimize the writes. But at the end of the day, the same thing that happens with them. So that's why we always look at most things from a very technical perspective. And that's why we use SD cards, because it pretty much allows you to get the best price for the memory pricing. And it allows you to put high quality stuff there. And it allows you, when it wears out, to replace it easily.
Right. So the last few months you've been talking, or the company's been talking about BSN Cloud. Yeah. What is that? And is it out there now, or is it still kind of coming?
Well, it's in a private beta right now. So we've got a lot of people actually using it, but it's been in a very controlled environment. Next week, we'll actually release it to public beta, so everyone can start using it. And then what is it? It really is, it's three things at the highest level. First, we've taken the kind of the core firmware on the device and really built it into kind of a full-fledged operating system with connectivity built into it. Where we got started, we had a lot of devices that were disconnected. They weren't on a network. Mm-hmm. So we built kind of the firmware so that as a base level device, it didn't have any built-in connectivity, wouldn't do anything. And you could add all that stuff in. It was all built to add it in. But what's happened over the years is people want connectivity. So we built in all this connectivity into the device and allow you to basically very easily deploy a network device. So that's what we've done on the device side. On the network side, we've rebuilt what was called BrightSign Network, and that's where we called it BSN.cloud. It's kind of the next generation of BrightSign Network, and rebuilt the back end so it allows for real-time connectivity with the new operating system update. So instead of kind of a polling method that we had before, it's now all real-time based on kind of WebSocket technology. And then the third part of it is a new version of BrightAuthor. We have a ton of people using BrightAuthor, and it's a great application for building sophisticated experiences. It's not really built for an end user. It was never built for an end user, but it only ran on Windows. You know, 10 years ago when we started the application, we thought, oh, Windows is a great platform. Of course, the world has moved on. So the new version of BrightAuthor, it's called BrightAuthor Connected. It seamlessly integrates with the BSN.cloud backend. And it runs natively on Windows, natively on Mac, and a run on any version of the Chrome browser. So it's all the same source code. So you get the same experience whether you're running it natively on your PC or you're running it in a browser. So all those combined is basically moving our platform forward to basically make it much more of a connected platform. And then with that, we have APIs at all levels of this. So we built a new operating system and we added a whole bunch of APIs on the box. So if people want to write to those APIs on the box, they can. If they don't want to worry about the box and they want to get to all the capabilities, the CMS providers or anyone can write to APIs in our cloud and give all the same features that are on the box, basically doing it via the cloud. And then at the top layer, on the cloud is content management, device management. There's all APIs in that with source code that we give to people so they can integrate into it. So you can use our kind of UIs if you want, or you can use our APIs.
Is this all stuff that an end user really doesn't need to worry about, doesn't need to really know? This is more for your partner ecosystem?
It's mostly for the partner ecosystem, but what it's going to deliver to the end customer is a better, more manageable set of devices
right.
when they have them in the field. So things will be more responsive. They'll get a lot more information into it. I mean, just one example in terms of what you can do is with this, with the new BSN.cloud and the new operating system, I can, from anywhere in the world, log into the BSN.cloud with a browser, and I can connect to any device that's running the new operating system, and I can do any kind of diagnostics I want on that device, up to and including a Wireshark capture of the network to find out what's going on. I can do a screen snapshot, all this in real time with the player. Mm-hmm. So for people managing large networks, the ability to virtually be inside that box without having to have kind of this log me in stuff where people can screw up things, having this diagnostic tool so you can figure out what's going on without having someone on site is a big issue that we hear from a lot of our customers. And that's really what kind of was the initial motivation for the cloud architecture to bring this connectivity in.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
And it kind of brings us to what we talked ahead of time that we'd kind of get into is the sorts of things that a CIO, an IT director, whatever it may be, needs to know when they're planning out and intending to run a very large scaled network. And I gather, you know, based on the volume of business you're doing and just what I generally hear in the industry, networks are getting bigger and more complicated.
They're definitely getting larger and larger. In fact, I was at a customer yesterday that is looking at rolling out 10,000+ units in Q1. Hmm. And they're like, whoa. And we, you know, it was interesting. We had IT folks in there. We had procurement folks in there. And we had content folks in there, and all of them have their, you know, the things that, you know, are important to them. The procurement folks was kind of interesting. It's like, hey, you know, we've got some people who's going to essentially have ads running on some of these displays. You know, how do I prove to them from a proof of play how many people were in the store? Those kind of statistics. So that's one part of our new cloud architecture. It gives you great reporting capabilities. The IT guy is asking us, hey, we're going to put these on our network. I need to know at any single time how many players are up, if there's any issues with the players. And then how can I diagnose this without having someone at the store be interrupted? Or secondly, send someone out there because they're – current situation they have, which is a smaller network, what kills them is having truck rolls, basically sending someone out. And they were saying it costs them about $250, you know, at the end of the day, by the time they get someone out there and get a problem resolved. And they're like, and a lot of times it's simple things that we could have, if we had the right tools, we could have done that remotely and saved the money. So, we're doing more and more of that. And these guys want real-time dashboards. They want to know real-time what's going on. And that's what we built in this new cloud architecture. It's not something that, you know, happened 15 minutes ago. We're going to get status on a real-time basis now and the ability to do these real-time diagnoses, whether it's, you know, the HDMI connectivity. Someone plugged it into the wrong port or they switched the port on the TV. All these types of diagnostic things we can run, or the network, something crazy is happening on the network, literally the ability to do a Wireshark capture of the local network and pull it back to the operation side. it's tools that they've never been able to have before without sending someone on site.
Yeah, but there are all kinds of Windows devices and I guess to some degree Linux devices that would give you a whole bunch of device management and reporting and capability to, you know, remotely give something a kick in the ass and get it running again. What's different about this?
Well, I think there's two things that really are different about this. The first is almost all of those tools essentially is requiring you to essentially run and have someone interacting with the desktop on that device. And what happens most of the time is people accidentally screw things up. So, what's different about this solution is it gives you all those tools, but you're sandboxed from actually screwing up the player. So that's the probably the number one thing. And secondly, the cost of those things start becoming prohibitive. Because all of those things are extra licensed products that you have to buy. Mm-hmm. So the cost starts adding up. So in fact, a lot of people actually don't do that because the fixed cost up front is super expensive. The nice thing about the BSN.cloud, what we call the control cloud, which is this, the ability to do diagnosis and things like that, is included with every player. So pull the player out of the box, connect it to our cloud. All that is free.
There are mobile or what they call them, mobile device management platforms, MDMs that are starting to kind of make themselves known in the digital signage ecosystem. Does something that's designed for Android or iOS or whatever, does that translate properly to this industry?
Yes. In fact, we have some of those guys are actually integrating with our control cloud architecture so that they can put BrightSign devices as part of the MDM.
So that's interesting.
Device class. And they're using our API and they're like, wow, this is great.
Cause this is an area that, you know, they certainly didn't start out looking at this and maybe they got asked about tablets and things, but all of a sudden somebody's asking about big 55-inch screens and they're probably looking around going, okay, we don't really do that.
Exactly. Well, and that was one of the reasons they came to us is like, hey, one, you guys have a lot of devices and people are asking if we can support them. And then two, they've got a lot of these guys have heterogeneous networks when you look at the larger enterprise.
I'm curious about the IT guys and in my dark past of doing consulting and sitting in, you know, Fortune 1000 or whatever company boardrooms and talking about digital signage networks. And what used to come up at least was, well, we're a Windows shop or we're an HP shop or we're a Dell shop or whatever. And they were pretty buttoned down about what they'd use and so on. And you guys come in or a reseller comes in touting their software and these little purple boxes. And they're looking at them going, we don't know that. We don't trust that. That can't come in behind our firewall. Has that changed?
Yeah. You know, definitely when I first started in this business, so 10 years ago, I would walk in. It's like, oh, we would never put anything on our device, on our network, unless it's a Windows device. The world has changed. And in fact, I think the biggest case in point was the customer I was with yesterday, it was the IT guy who was driving using BrightSigns, which was kind of a comical thing in the juxtaposition of 10 years ago when the IT people were like, oh, I'm never going to use that. So I think the reality of what's happened over the 10 years is the IT guys went from a world of, hey, this is the only thing we're going to do. And then with the explosion of different kinds of devices, whether they're one was Macs, like all of a sudden Macs are coming in. There's a whole group of people that wanted to use Macs and they were like, no. And finally, a lot of the creatives are like, hey, I'm going to use this. I could care less what you think. And then the next thing was the iOS devices, the Android devices, and pretty much they had to figure out a strategy for accommodating other devices on the network. Mm-hmm. But definitely 10 years ago, I'd walk in, they're like, well, there's no way we'd ever do this unless it runs Windows. I probably haven't heard that in probably the last 3 years, I'm guessing.
Okay. And is part of it driven by simply that it's a special purpose device that only does this, and the risk of tampering, malware, all those things drops way down?
Well, I think twofold. One, you know, there's been this explosion of different kinds of devices, so I think they've had to accommodate it. And then secondly, we've had our device run through so many different security approvals. In fact, we even have some in the spy agencies in the U.S. government. And I will tell you that the criteria for those devices to be on their network is insane. And we basically have instructions of basically making the box, it's secure just by default, but you can, you know, there's a bunch of configurations to make it ultra secure. And that really gets these guys comfortable. And the last part that gives them the extra comfort level is the operating system doesn't have to be auto updated. So if they know they've approved this device, there's no auto updating that's happening. And that is where a lot of issues come in on their networks. And what they worry about is like, hey, we approved this device and it would all look good. And then there was an operating system update that came in that we didn't get pre-approval on because we have to have it on for security reasons. And now it not only has security fixes, it has features in it that may violate their network policies.
Mm-hmm. So going back to the idea of what the IT managers and CIOs need to know, what are those things that they really need to think about as they're starting to plan out? I would imagine things like elasticity of demand and everything else.
Yeah. So what happens when you go from a small network to a large network is the back end can easily get overloaded. So, you know, here's just, you know, a quick thing that happens in a lot of these networks is it's based on stores. I have 3,000 stores and they're all running the same content. So when I do a content update and I tell all the devices, hey, you have new content. If you've not put in the right practices, every single device on that network, because they're all so perfectly synchronized with times and everything, will all go attack the server. And it will look like almost a distributed denial of service attack. Mm-hmm. Because all these things will come on. So that's one of the things that we work with them on is basically the ability to, although you're doing a massive update, these things are all going to spread the ability to call the servers and do things like that. But that's just a simple one. The other thing they're looking for is, hey, we want to make sure that we're not screwing around with the network during store hours. You know, because they're running the point of sale system. It's like, hey, that's where our money is flowing. And a lot of times we may be on the network or we'll be on the internet connection that point of sale system is being on. So we may not be on the actual point of sale network. It may be have a VP, a virtual network in the store, but we'll be sharing the same internet connection and they don't want that slowing down. So the ability for them to define windows and bandwidth levels, another super important thing that we basically have built in that they can set up and have rules around. Mm-hmm. The other one is literally the real-time kind of status of what's going on. We talked a little bit about that, of knowing what's going on with these devices. And it has to have a UI that's pretty straightforward. You can't be digging through a bunch of, you know, if you've got 10,000 devices, you can't be looking through, you know, pages of information. You have to have that abstracted up so that you can get to the devices that might be having issues. The next one is with all these network connections, you've got to be able to look at the devices and know, hey, did they get the content? Is anyone having problem getting the content? Because sometimes these internet connections, you know, start misbehaving at the store level. And it's good enough for the point of sale system because it's very small payloads going back and forth. But when you start downloading bigger content at night, you could have a problem. So all those tools are built into our dashboards to get them easy access. And those are the kind of things that they're worried about is how do I look at this from a high level, understand if there's any issues, and when there's issues, how do I address them? And that's really comes into a lot of these real-time diagnostics that we have so that, hey, I'm having trouble with the network. I'm going to wait till the store closes. Then I'm going to start running some network captures. I'm going to look at some other network diagnostics that I can run on, from the device looking out and pull that information back to headquarters and look at it.
Are the networks the way they're built out these days in the kinds of customers you're dealing with, are they set up to handle a digital sign network that's running 4K and to move all that media around?
Yes and no. Most of the networks have enough bandwidth kind of in the off hours because they are internet connections. And even if they're relatively low bandwidth, you've got many, many hours in the night that you can pull this down. So I would say in general, most of them have good enough network connections. And a lot of that was driven by the point of sale system. So moving the point of sale from dial up to internet, most of them have, you know, what we would think as a horrible network of, you know, kind of 256 or 768 kind of K networks. Those actually work all right when you're pulling down content in the middle of the night and kind of bandwidth shaping it if you have to during the day. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, then they won't work. So we also have the ability in our systems to be able to, for super low bandwidth connections, even people using cell phone networks, that we can do partial downloads and we'll restart those downloads. So, you know, most systems and kind of the way your computer works is, you know, if I'm downloading, you know, let's say I go to a website and I'm downloading a file and I close my browser and then I go back to re-download it again. Guess what? It starts all over again. In our system, we can do these incremental loads and we're checksumming it all along. So we're making sure that as we're pulling down these different chunks, we're making sure that the transfers were in fact good. And you can do that over multiple days. So we keep these little partial downloads so that for people that know that they have super trivial network connections, hey, it may take four nights to actually get that content down, but that's okay because we scheduled it out a week in advance. And those are the kinds of conversations we have with the IT guys. And those are the features, if you will, that we've kind of built into our system, mostly because we've shipped so many devices in such unique environments that you would never think of all these little things until you run into that problem.
Again, my experience with end users when I get involved on a consulting level is for the longest time, well, put it this way, when I started out doing it, it was driven by the IT guys. And then the IT guys kind of got out of the way, so to speak. They would come to one meeting and just kind of validate that, okay, we're cool with the direction you're going down, and then you never hear from them again. And then it became the marketing or the merchandising people, but are the IT people starting to again take over or take lead more accurately on these networks?
It really depends by customer. I would say what we've seen more and more is the users of the system. So whether it's the marketing folks, whether it's the HR people for corporate networks, they tend to be the drivers. But what we've seen kind of in more recent years is the IT guys are working side by side with them, and they're forming little teams. And I would say they're getting along better is probably what I would say. Because before it was an us and them.
Yeah.
The marketing or HR folks were like, yeah, the IT department, they're the prevention department. If we have them involved, we're never going to get anything done. I think the IT guys have kind of evolved and now work as a team. In fact, the customer I was at yesterday, you know, like I said, there were three of them in there. It was the IT, procurement, and the content folks. And literally they have good respect for each other, which I think is a big change. And I think, you know, going back to the original comment about the Windows devices, that used to be the attitude of the IT guys is we've got all of the control. and we can squash you in an instant. That's all changed. And now I think the IT guys are much more open to like, hey, we need to actually accommodate what the business is trying to do.
Yeah, I used to refer to those guys as the doctor knows. They sit there in the meeting with their arms crossed, and you just knew this is not going to go well.
It's not going to go well. And yeah, and like I said, in fact, it was just so funny that the conversation yesterday was the IT guy was the one kind of rallying around our Bright Sign box, which is like, oh my God, this is a complete turnaround.
Yeah. So last question, what's up with Bright Sign over the next little bit? I know that you're going to be launching BSN Cloud soon. Anything else coming?
That's going to be the major thing, is kind of rolling that out. And basically getting it kind of into final production, probably towards the end of the year, we think.
And trade show season's kind of over until the new year?
Yeah, trade show season starts kicking up, and we'll be promoting that. We've got as we talked earlier, we've got a lot of partnership stuff coming. We've been doing a lot of other kind of integrations on the technology side. So, the kind of the in vogue stuff of people counting and demographic stuff seems to be rising its head up a little bit more again. We'll see whether actually people do large scale rollouts of it, but it seems to be a little bit more interest there. So we're working on some solutions there. And then we've just got a lot of projects in the pipeline. That's probably the biggest thing going on.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, always great to talk to you. Thank you.
Dave, thanks so much. Great chatting with you.
Thank you. Take care. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.